Hello and welcome to the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. I'm your host, James Stansel. Do you like Walking Dead? How about World War Z? Night of the Living Dead? Any of those zombie movies, books, or whatever the case may be in popular culture right now? If you like those things, you're going to like the interview today. I'm talking with the author of a book called Zombifying a Nation, Race, Gender, and the Haitian Loi on Screen. The author is Toni Presley Sannin, and she's a professor at Eastern Michigan University, and the book is published by Macfarlane Press. And if you're interested in those things, you'll want to understand the true history of zombies, where they come from, and the connection to Haiti. And she really gets into those things in her book. And it's a book that's very accessible for everyone, and I think you'll enjoy this interview. We had a great time talking. We talked about some current events as well as American history and West African religions and how all those things kind of come together to give us what we know of today as the zombie. So give it a listen. I think you're going to enjoy. Again, the book is Zombifying a Nation, Race, Gender, and the Haitian Loi on Screen. Enjoy. Hello, and welcome to the New Books Network. I'm your host, James Stansel, on the African American Studies channel. And I have the pleasure today of being here with an author on a really interesting book here. It's called Zombifying a Nation, Race, Gender, and the Haitian Loi on Screen. I'm here with Dr. Toni Presley Sannin of Ypsilanti, Michigan's Eastern Michigan University. How'd I do, Dr. Presley Sano? Did I say it right, Ypsilanti?
You did very well. Ypsilanti is a beautiful little town.
Good.
Give it props.
Yeah, give it props. So I'm here with Toni Presley Sano, Eastern Michigan University. And her book is Zombifying a Nation, Race, Gender, and the Haitian Loi on Screen. So you're doing pretty well today. It's getting late into the semester. You doing pretty well, Toni?
I'm doing very well, grading, wrapping up the semester. I had a really beautiful semester with my students, and so I'm going to miss them. But we'll get on to other projects and think about the next semester and the next couple of weeks. So I'm also very excited.
Good.
Thank you so much for having me on, James.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for taking the time. I know it's a busy time of the year. And I was really excited about getting you here for our audience, Toni, because this is a really interesting book. And before we really get into the nuts and bolts of the book, I think our audience would like to know a little bit about you as a researcher and a scholar. Your background, any influential people that you want to mention, or if you want to give a shout out to anyone even, maybe tell us about why you were interested in this topic.
Thanks for that. I think my personal background is as important as my intellectual background. I was a child of Queens, New York, grew up in the hood, and went to a failing high school. But was enlisted in a bunch of AP classes and somehow got the attention of a program that was part of Hamilton College in Clinton, New York.
Okay.
System. And so someone actually came and recruited me.
Wow.
And was one of 25 students of color. This is every student of color on that campus of about 1,500 students in Hamilton. Is College on the Hill, beautiful place, upper middle class, lots of resources. Studied comparative literature with a minor in African American studies while I was there. It was during my senior year that I was able to spend 6 days in Haiti, my first time traveling internationally.
Oh, okay.
During Carnival, right? So the middle of February, and I'm traveling from upstate New York where it's freezing, snowing, and land in this place where cows and goats are walking around with cars. I'd never been any place like this before in my life. And 85 degrees, parties all over the place, and absolutely fell in love with the country. And after I graduated with my undergraduate degree, Aristide, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, collected and was a very hopeful time in the country. And so I bought a one-way ticket and planned to move back. But, of course, by the end of September. Mm-hmm. There was the coup d'etat.
Right.
And I stayed there for about another year and a half, but the economy just bottomed out, and I realized I couldn't live there any longer. And so I came back to the States and eventually got a master's degree from the New School for Social Research.
Ooh.
Loved it there, and was fortunate, really, really fortunate and blessed to meet M. Jackie Alexander, who is an amazing scholar and a wonderful mentor. And I should back up a little bit and tell you that my senior year at Hamilton, a professor named Andre Nicola McLaughlin came from Medgar Evers to spend a year at Hamilton. And she gave me my first class on Third World Women's Literature. And that just set the trajectory for, I think, the rest of my life. Then after I got my master's degree, I went to live in Ghana for about 6 months and traveled the country. It was and volunteer taught at Achimota School, which was Kwame Nkrumah's. So that was pretty exciting. Ghana is one of my favorite places in the whole world, and then decided to come back and finally finish it off and get my PhD. The Department of African Languages and Literature, it was called at the time. And oddly enough, in Madison, Wisconsin, right, you wouldn't think that, you know, African Languages and Literature would be someplace like that. But I had some of the most amazing professors and mentors there.
University of Wisconsin.
University of Wisconsin,
right.
Madison, yes.
One of the best schools in the country.
One of the best schools in the country, although with Scott Walker, we're not sure what's happening with all of that. But
the views expressed by Dr. Presley Sano may not necessarily be those of the New Books Network. But please continue.
So I was very fortunate there when I was there to have people who encouraged my interdisciplinary work and who encouraged me to make the connections between Africa and its diaspora. And so I ended up getting my degree in African Languages and Literature with a minor in Latin American, Caribbean and Iberian Studies. So I was able to combine my two, three, four, five loves
and passions.
Film, literature, oral literatures, and visual art from Africa into the diaspora, into the work that I do now. And so I'm really, really, I'm so happy to be at Eastern, where I can take what I've learned and share with students here. So.
Absolutely. That sounds great. And with your book, you're sharing some of your passion with the world.
That is the hope.
Absolutely.
That is
you,
the hope.
You are. I mean, it's a very well done book. You know, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I'm hoping that our audience will listen to this podcast and want to go and check it out themselves. And what's the book we're talking about? We're talking about Zombifying a Nation, Race, Gender, and the Haitian Loas on Screen. And I'm here on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel, with Dr. Toni Presley Sano of Eastern Michigan University. She is the author. And this book is published by McFarlane Press. And, you know, we talked a little bit offline about this, Toni, but the cover of this book is gruesome at the same time, yet interesting, and it has some meaning to it.
Would you agree?
It's
got its poetry to it, definitely.
Yes.
And as I was telling you, it's a quite interesting story because they didn't consult with me about the cover.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I saw the cover until it was already on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little horrified because it is so jarring.
Right.
But obviously, McFarlane knows what they're doing.
Yes.
Charlie Perdue, I must give a shout out to Charlie Perdue.
He
was so wonderful to work with. And their production company, it's actually quite a beautiful book that I talked to my friends about. And it was clear that McFarlane knows what it's doing because this will definitely get your attention.
It will.
And as you and I were talking about it, just this picture on the beginning just has so much meaning to it, with this white face on the outer layer,
right.
but then this black sort of bloodied face underneath it, which speaks to this misinterpretation, this abuse, this exploitation and violence against the black body in terms of the zombie.
So. Absolutely. And for those of you, you know, we're kind of describing the image for you. You know, this is a podcast. You can't see it visually, but if you want to pull up the book, you know, you can look it up at the McFarlane website or on Amazon or some of your other book sellers. And it's, you know, just like Tony said, it's a white face. And underneath, it's almost like the white face is like a covering, right? It's like a mask almost. And there's a black person underneath.
Yeah. Right.
Can you maybe just describe to our audience what does that really mean? And then we can kind of get into a little bit too, Tony, about, you know, what your book is really about and you know, some of the main topics therein.
I think it is the epitome of the saying that a picture is worth a thousand words.
Right.
And so people will bring different interpretations to the image, but I think it speaks to the distortion of the image of the Haitian person in the international community's mind, right? It's sort of this this foisting of a persona, right, on the black body from the international community. And so, but what is underneath is actually is, and this foisting is a violence to those bodies. And so just a really incredible cover, I think, really brilliantly executed and imagined. So I'm very, very happy with it. And the bloody fingerprints, of course. Also, even though the book doesn't do the George Romero sort of, you know, brain eating
Night of the Living Dead.
There's always, of course, this association of the zombie with it. So once people open the cover, they will understand that I don't do the gore, which is probably it's actually a big part of why the book takes the turn that it does. Most of the books on zombies go from these 1930s films.
Right.
I Walked with a Zombie, White Zombie, and then just continue straight through to these later films, these more recent films like, you know, the George Romero series, 28 Days, right?
And, right. World War Z.
Yes.
And the Walking Dead series.
Right, where there's a lot of sort of gore. I don't do gore very well. And so that was, in large part, my reason for staying with this much more sort of metaphorical reading of the zombie.
And what you're talking about is more realistic than what they're talking about.
In some ways, I think that George Romero's understanding of consumerism as a form of zombification is right on point, right?
Okay.
But what I do is situated culturally, right?
Okay.
This is actually a phenomenon in Haiti, and one of the things that's important to remember and that you're alluding to is that the source of the original zombie is actually Haiti, right?
Right.
Which was brought into the American imagination by a journalist named William Seabrook and his Magical Island after he lived in Haiti for a year, lived with a Mambo, which is a voodoo priestess, and was privy to some pretty incredible information. And what he did was he wrote a book that made the connection between this word that existed and this actual being, and which entered into the American imagination at the same time that the U.S. Marines were occupying the country.
Right.
So, this is getting a little bit ahead, but what I do is think about the way the zombie enters the American imagination at a time when the United States, specifically white males, are trying to deal with their own quote-unquote Negro problem, right? Slavery has ended. It's Jim Crow era. Right. So there is a sort of a desire to domesticate mm-hmm. in many ways the black male.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time that they're engaged, the United States is engaged in expansionist project.
Mm-hmm.
So they are invading brown and black countries.
Right.
The way of sort of catching up to these other world powers that had been mm-hmm. able to do this in earlier centuries. Mm-hmm. So it was what the zombie does is that it takes care of two problems. It helps the United States sort of deal with its own internal problem with mm-hmm. with people of African descent no longer being enslaved.
Right.
But also with their expansionist project and trying to subjugate people from outside the nation as well. So
creating an othering.
Oh.
Which I think is how you described it earlier, right?
Right, right. So you other from within and then you other from without. And you and everything that does not look like you becomes this monstrous figure that must be contained and controlled. And the zombie is a perfect metaphor for the uncontainable, the uncontrollable. And how do you deal with that? You consume its labor. You turn it into a being without will of its own in your own mind, right, in your own imagination. And then you can sleep easy at night, right, because you don't have to worry about people killing you in your sleep after all of the injustices that you have visited upon them.
Right. And so this is some, you know, the Americans came to Haiti and brought the ideal of the zombie back from Haiti to the United States.
Exactly. And then you had this proliferation of films. Hollywood was conscripted as part of this project of containing and controlling the black body, both internal to the country and external to the country. So these zombie films were quite effective at the time.
And we're here with Dr. Toni Presley Sano. She's a professor at Eastern Michigan University, and we're talking to her today on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel, about her book, Zombifying a Nation, Race, Gender, and the Haitian Loas on Screen. And I'm saying Loas correctly, right?
Is that it's correct actually Loa.
Oh, I figured I wasn't. Loa. I'm sorry, all my Haitian friends. My bad. I apologize. Loa. Haitian Loa. So what does that mean?
Creole is actually spelled L-W-A. So that's
L-W-A.
Right, because it's a phonetic language.
So when people look at the subtitle and they say, not Loa, as I said, but Loa, what is a Haitian Loa? I mean, just for people who maybe aren't familiar.
A Loa is a Haitian deity or a voodoo deity.
Okay.
Or spirit, or also called Mystère. Mm-hmm. And there are different ones with different domains and different attributes who can help guide the living.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they are spirits of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And are very, very important to, it's part of the Vodou pantheon, and, people have ceremonies that celebrate them. During ceremonies, they come and they are believed to ride the person who is possessed. So,
oh my.
Yeah. So if you remember, Zora Neale Hurston's Tell My Horse,
right?
She uses the, if you remember the cover, there's actually someone riding like a horse, another person. And so that's how it was described. Like the loa will ride someone, and the person takes on the persona of the loa. And these different loa have very different personalities, can be very strong, very funny. Sexually charged.
Oh my.
violent, right? Mm-hmm. Just as human beings are, right?
Right. And, all different types of humans,
exactly.
Right? Behaviors.
Exactly. But, you know, it can also be gentle and protective and just really beautiful sources of inspiration in people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
So the belief is that just a bit of history with the Loi, you know, people were brought to the nation of Saint-Domingue from different parts of Africa. You also had your indigenous population there, almost completely exterminated by Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of the people came from an area that was known as Dahomey, on the west coast of Africa, and central West Africa, the Congo area.
Right.
So part of the one of the beliefs is that these different belief systems came together where you had Dahomey you had Vodun, V-O-D-U-N.
Right.
Right. And then you have your own spirits in the Congolese traditions.
Mm-hmm.
They come together in this sort of cauldron of the slave plantation.
Right.
And out of this is created this new syncretic religion. Throw into this Catholicism, which outlawed these African traditions, but which people were able to sort of hide and conceal their own belief systems within. And so you have many of the Haitian Loi who actually correspond to Catholic saints.
Mm-hmm.
And it's believed quite popularly and has been actually documented by several scholars. There was a ceremony called the Bois Caïma ceremony in 1791, in which people got together under the aegis of Ogou, who was the Loi, and declared that they would either take their liberty or they would die trying. And so that is how Haiti came to be. Once they defeated the French, they renamed the country in honor of that indigenous population that had been almost exterminated, Haiti, which means mountainous country, mountainous nation. So always there is this turning towards the native population that was there before, as well as the African populations, is you know, but there's also a large American influence in there, partly because of 1915 to 1934 occupation by the United States Marines, and the sort of violent way that they imposed their will upon the people.
Well, that's an interesting piece of history there, and some may not be aware.
I hope I didn't ramble too much. I just get excited about this.
No. That was fine. Okay. That was fine. You know, it was a good piece of history that a lot of people may not know unless they, you know, until they get to college or unless they specifically study, you know, Haitian history or you know, American history during the.
Yeah.
You know, during that time period after the Spanish-American War, during the, you know, age of imperial period there.
And I should say, too, that
go ahead.
Once Haiti took its independence in 1804, rather than welcoming it into the fold of newly independent nations as the United States was welcomed into diplomatic relations, the rest of the world pretty much was, the Western Hemisphere was still very much invested in the slave plantation economy.
Right.
And, you know, Noam Chomsky talks about the fact that Haiti was never forgiven for the crime of taking its liberty. And so we saw this over and over again, with the United States not even recognizing Haiti's independence until, I believe, 1862, if I'm not mistaken. And after the revolution, Henri Christophe, who became Haiti's first king, built a fort, a beautiful fort in the northern part of the country, in order to protect the country against what he believed would be a French invasion. Little did he know that it would actually be the United States that would...
It would be the Americans, not the French.
In 1915.
And we're here with Toni Presley Sanneau, the author of Zombifying a Nation, Race, Gender, and the Haitian Loi.
There we go.
How's that?
Beautiful.
And the Haitian Loi on screen. And so we talked a little bit about the race. Can you talk a little bit, Toni, about maybe the gender aspects?
Yes. Yes. At the same time that the United States was dealing with its Negro problem, as well as its expansion into other nations, it was also dealing with this issue of the new woman, right? This new liberated woman, and what to do with her, because she was no longer interested in remaining in the home. She was traveling to other countries. She was engaging with people of other countries, and there was a desire for the white male to return her to her place as well.
Right. Okay.
As the subject, as, you know, this Madonna status, right? The mother of the nation, the mother of his children. And so you see a lot of this coming through in these films, these, this dichotomy between the corrupted woman and corruptive and corrupted. And you can see her fate in some of these films. Like I am, which one is it? White Zombie.
And right. That's what I was thinking about White Zombie.
Jessica really gets her just due at the end, along with the person that she would have been having an affair with, which was her husband's half brother. And it's interesting because at the end of the film, there is this, what sounds very much like an African-American minister intoning, you know, sort of giving this little sermon about how problematic she was, how corrupted she was, and you know, oh Lord, forgive her.
that's pretty good, Toni.
Up in the church, what? So
yeah, but yeah, I have not seen all of these films, but I've seen White Zombie, and of course we talk offline about Serpent and the Rainbow.
Yeah.
But I definitely remember that aspect very, very vividly about White Zombie. And just the name, White Zombie.
Yeah, right.
That stuck out to me as a young person. I didn't know this history. And I was like, well, why is it a white zombie? Aren't all zombies white?
Okay. Oh, right. Because you already. Right. Okay. Okay.
Right. And but as I grew up, I realized, no, the zombies, you know, the Haitian connection there. Right. And so that's something I really want to emphasize, is that, you know, when you look at The Walking Dead and Nightmare of World War Z and The Night of the Living Dead, the Romero movies. You know, you have white zombies and black zombies, different things, but it's mostly geared towards like a European type zombie or a white or Caucasian zombie, when that's not what the history really was.
Yeah, right. I think that's kind of a good thing in the way that George Romero just kind of universalized the zombie.
Right. That's true. That's
it was
true.
Quite revolutionary. And I think I read that first movie was almost revolutionary in its conceptualization. The main character, the guy who saves people, is actually an African American person.
Right.
And there was a lot of controversy around that. So
during that time, that's true.
He's making, I think, very, very important connections. But I will tell you that actually one of my favorite films in this whole book, there are several favorites, but one of my very, very favorites is The Love Wanga.
Okay. The Love Wanga, 1935.
Yes, which a lot of people don't know about.
Okay.
Because of its kind of crazy history. It was it was a film for Paramount Films, but because the main character is a black woman, Freddie Washington.
Right, familiar with her.
Yeah, and the topic of miscegenation, Paramount decided that after it was done, it was not going to release it.
Because that's probably why I haven't heard of it.
Controversial. And there's this wonderful story behind the making of the film. They actually filmed it in Haiti. They started filming in Haiti. But the filmmaker just decided to take all kinds of liberties, right, with Baudu, and tried to negotiate with a local Baudu priest, Ougans, to acquire some sacred objects, was refused, so just decided to take them, just to steal them, right? But, finds this love, finds a wanga, which is a kind of charm. It can either be for love, or it can be for death, it can be for healing, or it can be for destruction. He finds this wanga, obviously destructive wanga, on his car seat, and then a number of other things happen, and they have to leave Haiti and finish filming in Jamaica. But it doesn't stop there, right? It's almost as if the mojo, or the, you know, Haiti's mojo just followed them to Jamaica, and
they're cursed.
They I think one person gets impaled on on some sort of plant, and it's just a mess. Something that was supposed to take 2 weeks ends up taking 6 weeks to do the filming. So there's a very interesting backstory to the film as well. And so one of the things that I explore in the chapter is sort of the ambiguity of the white male characters, his history, right? Because, and there's a lot going on there with Jean-Jacques Dessalines. After he declared Haiti independence, made it illegal for any white to own land in Haiti. When the United States came in with the Marines, they changed the constitution so that whites could own land. And so you have this phenotypically white man, Adam Maynard, whose father owns a plantation. So, you know, it's kind of unclear if he really is white, if he's just a very light-skinned mulatto. And so, you know, this whole thing around miscegenation needs to be teased out, right, which is what I try to do in the chapter. And that's part of the issue, right, with miscegenation. If people mix enough, then you really can't figure out who's black and who's not, right? And so you cannot... You can't continue to be invested in whiteness, right? You can't, you know, the status quo cannot remain in place. And that's, you know, that was a major preoccupation for mostly white men at the time. So, so yeah, that was a really, really fun chapter to write. And it's funny too, the film is part of a series called The Weird Series. The Weird Series. And it's part of, so you'll find other titles on there, like, you know, Marijuana Madness, right? So it gives you an idea.
Reefer Madness.
Reefer Madness, right. Right. So Reefer Madness. So it gives you an idea of, you know, the category that it's played.
Right. What was going on?
Yeah. And you can see this sort of preoccupation with the white woman as well, right? And this issue of purity in the fact that the main white character is named Adam and his fiance is named Eve.
Right.
So these kind of really obvious references to biblical purity. Cleely is a voodoo priestess. She's a mambo. Who is hell-bent on, I'm sorry, I probably shouldn't have said that, but bent on securing this man for herself, even though she has a mulatto love interest, or someone who is mulatto who's interested in her. And one of the things that comes up over and over again is, you need to stick with your own kind. You need to stick with your own kind, which she refuses to do. And so in the end, I don't want to spoil it for people, but, you know, she also gets her comeuppance. So
there was all kinds of messages, maybe not so positive.
Amazing messages. And
I guess positive depending on your perspective, whether it was a positive message or not.
I think that Paramount, though, realized how it could be taken in different ways. And so, you know, was probably one of the reasons it did not get released. So, but hopefully, you know, with books like this, the ultimate hope is that films like this that I think are really quite important to our understanding of history will make their way into the general population and resurface and be written about more, because people like Freddie Washington were amazing groundbreakers. And
Halle Berry before there was Halle Berry.
Before there was a Halle Berry, and ended up leaving Halle. She actually played in what is that film? It's Imagination. Oh, it's the young.
Oh, Imitation of Life.
Imitation of Life, right?
I got you back.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. She actually played in Imitation of Life.
Right.
But filmmakers kept trying to cast her as white. And, you know, she just completely refused and eventually left Hollywood because she was tired of, and, you know, became actually a civil rights activist. Very clear about where her political allegiance was.
That sounds like a future book maybe in the works for you right there, Tony.
It does.
Ready to watch.
I'd have to do a lot of archival work because very little is available. From what I've seen, very little available about her, you know, just readily available. So, but yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of brings me to another point. And again, I'm here with Dr. Tony Presley Sanel of Eastern Michigan University. And we're talking about her book by McFarlane, Zombifying a Nation, Race, Gender, and the Haitian Loi on Screen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think I'm doing okay, Tony. Loi, right? I got it now.
Excuse me. You were doing very well. Thank you.
All right. Good. Loi. And that brings me to another point when we were talking just briefly there about Freddie Washington and potentially a book project for you. I think it's really good for the audience to know, you know, how a scholar like yourself, how do you go about doing the research for a book like this? You know, what was the process? How long did it take? You know, and, you know, I understand how that goes, you know, to a certain extent. But everybody who, you know, if you haven't done academic research like this, you may not know. So maybe just talk about that. You know, what steps did you take? How long did it take? What did you have to do, et cetera?
It's actually a very magical process.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. It's actually quite magical. Sometimes I was just rereading the introduction the other day and it was like, wow, I cannot believe that I did this. It's almost as if this intellectual curiosity takes over and one question leads to another question.
Right.
And once one thing is answered, it presents itself in a different way. And there's another question that has to be answered. And it's beautiful. It just comes organically. It just emerges really quite organically. Which is why I'm so grateful for editors and reviewers because, you can just keep going and going and going.
Especially if it's a passion or something that you're really motivated or interested in.
Oh, yeah. It was so much fun to write. It was just so much fun to write. And it was only after about a year or maybe 2 years after starting the writing that I got that Loi connection. I wasn't seeing it for the first, you know, 1 or 2 years, first edits of the book. And finally, because I was working on another project at the same time.
Okay.
One day, you know, maybe in a dream or something, it was like, holy smokes, the Loi are throughout these films. Whether the filmmaker was conscious of what they were doing or not, that's the question in some ways. But from the perspective of Vodou, which we see in the Love Wanga, right? Mm-hmm. Whether someone is conscious of their presence or not, they can still manifest themselves.
Mm.
So part of the project of the book is to highlight their presence, to point out the way that they are misinterpreted by some of these filmmakers, to make it clear the reality of the tradition from which they come. So, and to explore how they are used in the, and what they reveal, right? Not only about the filmmakers, but about the socio-political context
of the time.
Right? And also creatively, right?
You had ready access to these films? Because these are older films, with the exception of like The Serpent and The Rainbow. I mean, how did you get access to them? Did you just you were able to get them from the studios or?
Oh, no. I think most any self-respecting university library has a copy.
Oh, should have.
Zombie, and I walked with a zombie. So many people have written about it. I mean, a whole book was written on, I think it was White Zombie. Rhodes wrote this whole book on it.
Right.
Brian Sinn writes a lot about these older films. And so that became the question, right? What can you say? What could I say was unique?
Unique and different.
Original, right, about these films that have been written about so much. And so I'm so grateful for the time that I've been able to spend in Haiti so that I could hopefully bring something new to the conversation.
Absolutely. And I feel like you did.
Thank you.
I feel like you did. And again, the book is Zombifying a Nation. The nation being?
Haiti.
Yeah, Haiti. Or Haiti, as we say in North Carolina.
Okay. Haiti.
Zombifying a Nation. The nation of, well, I'll say Haiti.
Okay.
Race, gender, and the Haitian Loa on screen. And I'm here with Dr. Toni Presley Sano.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a professor at Eastern Michigan University in Ypsilanti, Michigan. And again, her book is published by McFarlane Press. And it's a great book. If you're interested in the history of series like The Walking Dead, if you like the Romero Living Dead movies, White Zombie. Hey, if you are a White Zombie, the band, fan or Rob Zombie.
Right on.
any of those things. Serpent and the Rainbow. You know, going back, if you're interested in Haitian history, or if you're interested in religious studies, the religion of these, you know, the creation or the, you know, the connection between Catholicism and these West African religions to create religions like voodoo and Santeria.
Right, which are quite revolutionary in their own right.
Absolutely. You know, this is a you know, really interesting book there for you that Toni has created. And Toni, you know, I could talk to you all day. We talked about that before. It's like we're sitting around and we're, you know, chopping it up. But I know that you've got to get ready for the end of semester exams and, you know, kind of shutting it down here at the end of the semester. So before we go, I wanted to give you
talking to you. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're definitely going to do it again. And that's what brings me to my next point. You know, can you maybe tell the audience about some of the current things that you're working on, or if you have any future projects that you'd like to share with us, or things that we can look out for from you?
Why, yes. Thank you for asking that question.
Of course.
Actually, I will tell you that this book actually came out of the project that is going to be published.
Forthcoming, okay.
Forthcoming spring/summer 2017.
Okay.
And it's called Histoire. Haitian history, memory, history, memory, and the cultural imagination in Haitian cultural production.
Okay.
And the book is based on my field research in a small coastal town that was one of the hubs of the transatlantic slave trade.
Okay.
Ouida, right? Small little town. That I lived in for about a year. And but also I also look at the Congo and think about how visual and oral histories come through in or memory and history intersect, right?
Okay.
Through oral and visual culture as they are manifest in Haiti. And I actually use the Loa as a sort of lightning rod or a site, right? Which is the Marasa, the twins, the sacred twins in the Vodou tradition. And I also theorized the project through Kamau Brathwaite, the historian's concept of Tidalectics, which refers to the back and forth movements of the Atlantic Ocean, right? Mm-hmm. And I propose that it's a long conversation going on from Africa into its diaspora. And if we look at visual culture as well as oral culture, mm-hmm. then we can and think about them in relation to history or traditional right. history, then we get a much more clear and more holistic picture of what actually transpired and how people okay. process that history. So I'm so very, very excited about it. And
okay. Sounds
again,
good to
back
me.
To this was a sort of side project. So it, mm-hmm. it kind of got me out of my head around and so I watch these films just for fun. They're so much fun.
Right.
Much fun. And I will say too,
Yes.
If someone is interested, I have an article in Black Camera, which is one of my favorite journals.
Black Camera.
Black
okay.
Camera. It's an international journal of black cinema
mm-hmm.
in which I talk about two films that didn't make it into the book.
Oh, okay.
And that star Mantan Moreland. And,
yes, I'm familiar. Yeah.
Madame Soltiwan, right?
Okay.
Who were very, very famous in the 1930s and 40s, made over 100 films each, were incredibly prolific. Mm-hmm. The kinds of films that they had to take speaks to Hollywood at the time.
Mm,
so again, right. you know, dealing with the Negro question and which of course Spike Lee, right, a contemporary filmmaker,
mm-hmm.
Reminds us of in Bamboozled.
So, Bamboozled, absolutely.
Right. So, right. So, you know, I'm always very, very keen on making these distant connections to what's happening contemporarily. So hopefully
absolutely.
I've been able to do that with this book. And thank you again so much for inviting me to do this. It's been so much fun talking to you.
Absolutely. And I want to get you back too, Tony, when you get that book complete.
Right on.
Let's get you back and we can do part two, part three, or whatever we want to call it. So we can talk about your next book as well. And then I want you to, like we talked about offline, I want you to write your personal story about Haiti. That's the book I want to read.
Yeah.
About your adventures in Haiti, because I know that's a book.
Well, yeah,
a book and a movie.
The preface, that little bit, right, where the
right,
I just wandered down the street with this guy that I'd met in a cafe, and suddenly I said, I might end up being the zombie. Maybe I don't want to continue down this road.
You left the people wanting more. We want more of those stories. And again, I'm here with Toni Presley Sano. She's an outstanding author, an outstanding person. McFarlane Press, her book Zombifying a Nation, Race, Gender, and the Haitian Loi on Screen, mm-hmm. right? And we're gonna let Toni go so she can finish up her fall semester and get to her family like mm-hmm. the rest of us are going to do here in December. But any final words you want to leave us with, Toni? You know, any you know, final just last thoughts or comments you want to share about Zombifying a Nation?
Oh, that is the question.
Or other than it's awesome and go buy it, right?
Well, no, I think that we really, I would say that honestly, I would hope that people hopefully who are listening to this will help us rethink the Global North's relationship to the Global South, right? And try to make a much more equitable relationship.
Yes.
And with Haiti in particular, because that nation has given the world so much
yes.
that we stopped treating it as a pariah and
well said.
Let it live its gifts, right?
Well said.
Yeah, thank you for that opportunity.
No problem. And you know, and learning more about the history which you present in your book, Zombifying a Nation, maybe people can understand and take some responsibility and not only always look to blame Haiti and other countries for their problems and look at what the United States and some of the other European or Western powers had to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take some responsibility
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not just
think about the Clintons' relationship to Haiti is really right. fascinating. Yes, it was their honeymoon destination. So there's a bit of nostalgia about it,
mm-hmm.
but we also must remember that a few years ago, well, there was first the pig eradication program, which completely mm-hmm. gutted the Haitian peasantry, but also mm-hmm. just a few years ago, Bill Clinton had all of this American-grown rice shipped into Haiti, which completely gutted the rice industry and apologized for it. But now we have the crisis of peanuts that are proposed to be introduced to Haiti, and mm-hmm. Haitians grow their own peanuts. It's an integral part of their economy.
So that could be a potential problem there as well, it sounds like.
Oh, it's a problem.
not even a potential. It's already a problem.
When you gut someone's economy, inevitably, if you are in control of people's stomachs, you are in control of their destiny.
Ooh, powerful.
And so, you know, this is a fact. Apologies are lovely, but then stop making the same mistake over and over again. That is, that's all that they ask.
And that's one of the lessons of history.
Mm. If we learn it.
Should be.
If we learn it, right?
If we learn it. And I just wanted to ask you too, Tony, you said Black Camera. Which issue is it? Is it the current issue that's out
yes.
or one that's coming out?
Yes, it just came out in October. Brand new, hot off the presses.
So it's the current issue of Black Camera. You can see some of Tony's work in there. Some of the films that didn't make the cut into her book, she talks about and analyzes in the current issue of Black Camera, which is an international film journal, correct?
Correct. The only one of its kind.
Absolutely. And so we're going to wrap it up here. Tony, please say goodbye to my audience.
Bye, audience. Thank you so much, James. This has been so much fun.
Absolutely. Thank you. And we're here with Dr. Tony Presley-Sano, the author of Zombifying a Nation, Race, Gender, and the Haitian Lower Zone Screen, published by McFarlane Press. Check it out. It's reasonably priced. It's priced not for the academic audience, but for the general readership.
Exactly. Right.
And so you can get it on Kindle as well. You can go to Amazon or any of your book publishers or booksellers. If you have a person in your family or someone that you know that is really interested in zombies and those kind of things, this can be a great gift for them. Right? So definitely do so.
Yes. So my contact information will be on the website, correct, James?
Yes, it will.
Great.
There'll be a link. You can go to Dr. Presley Sannon's Eastern Michigan page, and you'll be able to click right through from New Books Network and purchase her book from Amazon.com.
Beautiful. Thanks, James.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Presley Sano. And thank you, everyone who's listening on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. And we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye. I'm your host, James Stansel. All right, we're back on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. I'm your host, James Stansel. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Tony Presley Sanon. And the book is Zombifying a Nation, Race, Gender, and the Haitian Loi on Screen. Zombifying a Nation. And it's published by McFarlane Press. So I hope you enjoyed that interview. Hope you're not too afraid of zombies and the like. There is a real history behind them, but it's been greatly fictionalized. And if you read this book, you'll learn about some of the earliest films and the movies and the original novel that this all came from, which gives you your Walking Dead of today. So on that note, everyone have a wonderful evening, a wonderful day, wherever you are. And we'll see you next time on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. I'm your host, James Stansel. Peace and love.